Good morning and welcome to another edition of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I think Hanson was wondering if I was ever going to start talking.
Well, I didn't know we were going to start the show right now.
Yeah, no, we're going. So it is today, Friday, August 3rd. It's about 11 in the morning. And it seems like there's always a lot going on in the world of sports. We have some really cool guests lined up today. We have Ken Hamill, who is the head pro at Stonebridge Country Club. And by the way, I should introduce myself first. My name is Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hanson.
Yes, so here we are. We're rusty. We had last week off. Harry was nice enough to put together a highlight show, which is also just really humorous to me that we have a highlight. We have a highlight show.
He called it Volume 1.
Too. Volume 1. Well, I guess that's like Mel Brooks with History of the World Part 1. They never came out with a sequel to it. So maybe that's where we're going. But a lot going on around here. We have Ken Hamill. Stonebridge hosted the New Hampshire Open a few weeks back. So we will talk to Ken in a little bit. And then we have Patty Arnold, who is the beat writer for the Grand Junction Sentinel and also a proud Kansas Jayhawk, which I realized when we were on the website yesterday. So we will have Patty coming on to talk to us about Grant Levine and what she has seen firsthand, which is pretty cool. And then this is just thinking out loud, I'd love to get Grant on once things settle down for him a little bit.
Sometimes things settle down during an All-Star break, but when you're in the All-Star game.
He's in the All-Star game.
You don't even get a break.
Yeah, you don't get a break, but by the same token, he is playing in a shorter season. There is a lot that is taking place in the Pioneer League as far as team changes for next year and things like that that we'll talk to Patty about. And Grant's had a good, fun year. In the last week, they had a lot of excitement around there, too. I had Kevin Levine texting me about the guy who was in the locker next to Grant.
Somebody that most of our listeners will have heard of.
Yep, Matt Holliday, former NL MVP, former teammate of
Chris Carpenter.
Chris Carpenter, our previous guest on the show. But, Grant's kind of having just – you look at the season and you go, this is – certainly exceeded the expectations that I've had. I think that it probably has exceeded the expectations the Rockies had when you take an 18-year-old kid and you send him 2,200 miles away from home and say, go play baseball. There are other kids that were drafted higher in the draft who at this point have struggled. And I'm talking about high school kids because it really is a big adjustment.
I wish we had actually made specific predictions because I would have
predictions were wrong.
I would have predicted that he would be hitting over 300.
I would have figured that he would have been hitting over 300, but my initial prediction was that he's going to start out, be a little bit slow because it is an adjustment leaving. And after a couple, 3 weeks, and I said, basically, I think I said it the exact same way. Within a couple, 3 weeks, he will figure things out and things will be in a better place for him. He didn't really have that adjustment. He just came out of the gate raking.
Yeah, and that is probably what I would have predicted because we saw his approach, his batting style, his eye, and the fact is he has had a lot of experience with wood.
Yep, so exactly. And that makes the biggest difference of anything.
Yeah, it's more like I would have thought he would have come out hot, and then maybe he would have slowed down a little bit as the pitchers got used to him. Maybe they start throwing him a lot more off-speed stuff, but he's stayed really consistent to still be hitting over 360.
And a smart hitter, which we knew that about him from the beginning. Like he, I'm going to throw, this one's for Jason Bergeron, quabs, quality at bats.
Yeah.
there is a program called Game Changer, if you're not familiar with it, that allows you to track basically everything that's happening. And I don't know if quab is a game changer thing, but there are certain things that qualify you for a quab. Hard hit ball, and I don't even know if they call it a quab, but that's what we call it. it's if you have an at-bat of six or more pitches, if you have two strikes on you, and I think you extend the at-bat by two pitches, there are a number of different components that go into that. We knew Grant was going to do that sort of stuff because we had seen him do that enough in high school.
Yeah, he doesn't chase. And the only thing that's going to prevent him from getting quality at-bats based on number of pitches is the fact that when he gets a ball to hit, he usually doesn't miss.
So, yeah.
He drives it somewhere.
And of course, it's a completely different ballgame, so to speak, when you're in New Hampshire. And facing high school pitching than when you're facing kids who are either in their third, fourth year of pro ball because they're foreign free agents who are signed and have been through the Dominican League, the Venezuelan League, rookie ball, and have worked their way into this position and are 19 or 20, than the college kids who are a bit more experienced. So, you know, Grant's basically, his spring training, for all intents and purposes, was a high school season.
Right. So what you're getting at is the level of pitching wasn't as strong, but he was the most feared hitter in the lineup, hitting third, getting pitched around. So that comes with a bunch of challenges that he's not facing. In this lineup, he's batted fifth a lot. So he's not viewed as the only strong hitter where the pitchers are game planning just for him.
Right.
And that's an advantage for him.
Yeah, it is an advantage. And yeah, you think about in any major league sport, if you're the Patriots and you're going into town and somebody's playing against the Cleveland Browns a week before, they will look past you because they're game planning for the Patriots. And the same thing happens in every sport. It happens in college too. And you think about in high school, Grant coming up to bat is a big deal. And to a lot of these kids who may not play what I'll consider any kind of organized baseball after they're done with high school, if you're pitching against this guy, this is a chance to make a mark, like one way or the other. Either Maggie and I had conversations about it playing Little League ball with as it pertains to a kid from Goffstown who crushed one to right center against her, probably one of the better hitters in the state. But hey, sometimes if a good hitter beats you, you say like Pedro does, you tip your cap to him.
Right.
And
you battled and that they won that battle.
It is what it is. They won that battle. And sometimes you win that battle, but you got to lay it all out there. You can't. Yeah, you might pitch around a guy depending on a situation. But yeah, what you're saying as far as him being one of the lights in a good lineup. So we'll learn more about that lineup today as well from Patty Arnold. And some other things in the world of sports too, and we're going to conclude our first segment in a couple minutes. But my favorite story of the week is the LeBron James school story.
Is it? Yeah, what
absolutely.
A great story.
So in case you missed it, LeBron opened up a school in his hometown of Akron, Ohio. And my other favorite thing that goes along with it is you think about how badly it was handled when he went from Cleveland to Miami and the decision, and I'm taking my talents to South Beach, and how he was just derided for that across the board. The timing of this, I think it was probably coincidental, but the timing of this where he signs the big contract, but he's still got his tentacles in his hometown, and it's such a positive PR story. You look at how things shake out a few years later, and you go, that's how you handle that. Nobody's going to burn your jersey now. And from, you know, your friend of mine, Andrew Spector, who's the biggest Cleveland sports fan I know, at least in New Hampshire, he said, yeah, there's not that venom about him because we got our championship.
Right,
and
he people came back are happy. And delivered.
Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing about the decision, part one, was that the announcement where he had that interview with Mr. Gray was in a Boys and Girls Club. And I think at that point he had donated a lot of money to Boys and Girls Clubs.
He has donated a lot of money to a lot of, like,
it was still a positive setting. It didn't really work out the way it came across. But this one, I do think it was calculated. I mean, he obviously had the plans in place for a while to...
Yes.
Partner with Akron to open this school. So that's not necessarily planned, but he didn't have a press conference after the big signing with the Lakers.
No. It was just,
and I think it was part of the strategy to wait and do the first press conference, so to speak, here. And where did he do it? He did it in the library of this new school with Rachel Nichols, and much different tone than the interview regarding decision part one.
Yeah.
But really, just a tremendous accomplishment. It just shows what kind of a person he is. And you can tell how much it meant to him with all the quotes and stories about what it was like for him back in the third and fourth grade, having to miss so much school. And now creating this opportunity for hundreds of kids who are a little bit behind in their reading skills to come to this school that is much more supportive. You know, longer class days, they feed you breakfast and lunch.
Yep.
Just seems like it's going to be a tremendous environment for those kids.
And my favorite part of it is the bikes. Just because it's such, it's just a detail, but it's such a cool detail. So each kid gets a bike and a helmet. And his foundation has made bikes a big part of what he's done. Because when he was a kid, that was what gave him the ability to get from school to wherever he was going, a community center, a basketball court. And like, I love where we live. I love our town, but if there was one thing that I could change about this town, it would be to make it a more bike-friendly town.
Sidewalks.
I would love for my kids just to be able to, hey, I'm going, like we did, I would disappear on my bike and I wouldn't show up until like 5 or 6 at night. And mom knew where I was and she knew who I was with, mostly. More important, who I was with than where I was.
Yeah.
But we would just disappear, fart around on our bikes, just do whatever. And it gives you a degree of freedom and autonomy to be a kid and to make good decisions and to decide not to make bad decisions.
Yeah, it's just tough with the geography here.
Yeah.
Things are more spread out, and without any sidewalks, that's the double whammy.
I'm trying to see how many people I can name check in here, but if you talk to Jeff Beyer, he was driving from, or he was riding his bike from up where you live over to McKelvey when he was in elementary school.
Oh, okay.
Look, well, how he turned out. He turned out fine.
Well, I guess if you play the hill, if you play the hills right, you don't have to work that hard.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a hike though.
Yeah, it is.
That's a hike over up Joppa Hill too. So, all right, we'll take a quick break. We're going to come right back with Ken Hamill, the head pro at Stonebridge Country Club. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen, and we are joined by Ken Hamill, the head pro at Stonebridge Country Club over in Goffstown, as well as the honorary president of the New Hampshire chapter of the New England PGA. Ken, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. Golf is on our minds because it's summer, and last week, of course, the New Hampshire Open was played over at your course, Stonebridge, which was a tournament with a first-place prize of $10,000. How did you guys get chosen to host the tournament, and what did you have to do to prepare for it?
Each year, they have the New Hampshire Open, and we've been a very big supporter of New Hampshire Golf and the New Hampshire Golf Association. So we've hosted many tournaments. We've hosted the State Am. We've hosted the Junior Championship. We've hosted the Mid-Am Championship. So we're on their regular schedule, and they're looking for a course that can play difficult. So they asked us last fall, and we were very eager and happy to do it. Getting ready for it isn't overly stressful. It's more stressful for the maintenance crew. They have to mow the greens at night and roll them at night and mow the fairways and tees at night. So they did a split shift during the whole tournament. They started on Sunday afternoon. They mowed the fairways and the tees, and then they rolled the greens that Sunday night, and then on Monday morning they came out and double cut the greens. So it's more stressful for them. For me, it's just having enough staff to make sure they got enough range balls and the carts keep going out. And I stood behind the desk for the 2 days, which was great because I get to see every guy that comes into play and talk to them and meet with them. So that's why I do it rather than play. I enjoy seeing all the people come in.
Yeah, it was fun to sort of hear about that and get the inside look at a tournament like this. And the competitors that you're referencing that you got to meet were a mixture of professionals and amateurs. Tell us a little bit about how the field of players was determined for the New Hampshire Open.
There is no real determining factor. Anybody can sign up. So all these states have the New Hampshire Open, they have an open. And so anybody can play in it. You can be a professional or an amateur. A lot of the guys are not PGA professionals. They just play all the time, and that's how they do. Anybody can sign up for it. You could sign up for it if you wanted to. There's no handicap restriction. You just got to pay your money to get in.
And is there a different entrance fee for somebody who is, quote-unquote, a professional versus an amateur?
Yes, there is. There was, I think it was $350 for the pros and $150 for the amateurs. And if you were a New Hampshire PGA professional, it was $250.
Right on. So the tournament was a three-day tournament, first 2 days heading towards a cut. And the tournament got off to an exciting start on that first day when Peter French shot a course record 62, which is 10 under par. What did you think of that performance, and were you able to see any part of French's round?
Yes, first of all, I did see some of the round. I didn't see much because, like I said, I was in the golf shop, but I did step out and watch him play, hit a couple tee shots, and make some putts.
I don't think he missed a whole lot of putts if he shot a 62.
No. I think he was hitting it close that day.
Right.
Yeah. No, it was a great performance. To shoot 10 under par at this golf course on the Black Tees, the rating here from the Black Tees is 73.3, I believe, and 136. So that tells you the difficulty of the course. I will say the course was a little soft, though, because of all the rain we had, and there was really no wind. So that made it, they were really shooting at their pins the first day. There were some good scores the first day. So I think that helped them out a little bit, but anybody that shoots 10 to par, you got to hit it good, and you got to hit it close to the hole, and you got to make the putt.
Yeah, you really do. And I think I heard that it was bogey-free round, and the crazy thing that I heard was that it was the first time he'd ever played the course. And I can attest to it being a very difficult course, especially the back nine, especially from the black tees. And the quote that I heard was that he just tried to hit it where he thought it made sense, so he stayed out of trouble, and obviously the putter got hot.
Yes, he had never seen the course before. I will tell you, a lot of guys that came in, and his father was his caddy, and we chatted for about 10, 15 minutes on what holes he should watch out for, and I did that with a lot of the guys. I'm more than happy to do that for anybody. And the one hole that I told him to watch out for was number 14, and he actually did hit it in the hazard on number 14 and punched it out and ended up making par anyways.
Oh, wow.
So really, if he could have hit that one in the fairway, he might have shot a 61. Well, who knows? He could have eagled the hole, shot a 60, but it was a great round, and obviously he was hitting it good, and he hits it a long way, so it makes a course. The real thing about this course, and not to say that it was easy because there was no wind, wind puts a bite into this course, as you know. When it's windy up here, the course plays tough.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's a lesson for the future. If you haven't played the course, try and get some local knowledge, whether it's from a caddy or somebody who walks the course or the head pro. So that's a fun insight right there. Another thing I'm curious about is the weather delays, and day one had a couple of those. How are the decisions made on when the delays would begin and then when the players would get out there and start resuming play?
In any weather delay, when I'm in charge, I'm thinking of safety of all the players first. And when there's 100, well, there was probably 74 guys out there at a time. When somebody's far away, you can't wait till the last minute to call them out. So we distinctly watch the radar a lot, as long as the New Hampshire Golf Association. I've gotten to know the weather around here pretty good, where it comes in from, how it's going to come in. If it hits Melford a lot of times, Melford, New Hampshire, then it's going to come and hit us later on. So we watch that weather constantly on the radar, and I would check it on my radar. If I thought something was going on, I would get up and I'd tell them, just watch out for this one. And when they go back out, luckily they were quick storms. So as soon as we know that lightning and that thunder is out of the way and the course is playable and it's not saturated and the greens are dry, we'll put them back out on the course.
And then would the New Hampshire Golf Association defer to you to make that final decision?
No, that's their decision. They just asked for my advice. I don't remember if it was day one or day two, but he came into my office and he came out because there was one coming and I had been doing some work. And he asked me, he said, come look at this. And I looked at it and I said, yep, that's going to hit us. So we waited about 2 minutes and then because they have to get ready for everybody to come in because we try to park them in certain spots and make sure we're all ready for them to come in. So we called them in about 2 minutes and went out. I think it was a 38-minute rain delay that particular time.
Okay. So as I mentioned, the tournament was 3 days with a cut after the first two. And you talked a little bit about the course and how it plays. How did you determine the strategy about how to set it up each day in terms of the tee locations and the pin placements?
Well, that I will tell you, honestly, that's not in my hands. It's the New Hampshire Golf Association that comes out. They paint the course the day before, and they pick the pin placements and the tees. They go out and set the tees in the morning. On Sunday, they came and painted and picked the pin placements for day one and two. On Tuesday, they picked the placements for day three and the tees. They went out and set the tees every day. I tell them what I think. Whether they use it or not, that's up to them. But that's how they do most every tournament. They make the final decision.
Gotcha. Well, the eventual winner of this tournament was Jason Thresher, who birdied the last two holes on day three to finish 15 under overall and win by two. What do you know about Jason and his game?
He's not one of the longest hitters out there, but he's probably the straightest hitter that I saw over the 3 days. He's a great player. He has won the Mass Open three consecutive years, and I think he's the only one that has been able to do that. He plays in a lot of different events. He plays all winter, and that's his job, basically. He's a real quiet guy, I can tell you that, but he can putt. I saw him on a couple holes, and his putts were around the hole every time, and he was steady. Because he shot 68, 66, 67 in the 3 days for that 15-under total. That's great shooting for 3 days at this golf course. I don't care what level you're at. It's great shooting, and he did a great job playing it.
Yeah, and he was clutch. I saw him finish the tournament off that 54th hole, about a 20-foot birdie putt left to right, just calmly made it to win. And then you're right, there wasn't much of a celebration. It was some sort of quiet high fives with, it looked like, his family members, and off to go pick up his $10,000 first-place check.
That's describing him in a nutshell. You know, I get to know these guys just a little when they're here because I do talk to them, and that's, he was just a real quiet, nice person and loves the game of golf and obviously is a great golfer.
Yeah, and the gentleman who came in second, Pat Pelletier, you probably know him a little bit better. He's a 30-year-old amateur. He's had quite a summer, and he just won the Stroke Play Championship this week. What are some of the considerations for a player like Pelletier, who's good enough to finish second in a big tournament like this? How does he decide whether to stay as an amateur or turn pro?
It's hard to give that insight on these players. The life that these guys lead is very tough at this level. There's four or five players that are elite in this level that go around and play and they win money all the time, and then there's the other 60 or 70 that are right on the bubble of trying to make it. So when somebody stays as an amateur, I think it goes into their job, their family, and really what they're looking for in their life. I mean, Pat's a great guy, very relaxed, easygoing. I've known him for quite a few years, and he just loves playing golf, and obviously he's having a great year. I mean, didn't see his final score in the Stroke Play Championship, but after 2 days, he was a lot of under par.
Yeah, I think he finished somewhere around 15 under. He won by five or six, so he really just kind of ran away with it. Really, really impressive, and another guy who's fun to watch. Well, you're speaking of professionals, two of the best of all time, Tiger and Phil, are set up for the one-on-one duel on Thanksgiving weekend with a winner-take-all prize of a little bit more for $10 million, as it's been reported. Who's your pick to win that match?
Phew, you put me on the spot here. You know, it all depends who has the hot putter. That's the way I look at the game. If you watch the PGA Tour every week, the guy that wins is the guy that stays steady and gets the hot putter and putts the best. That's my personal opinion. They all hit it good all the time, most of the time. So I'm going to have to pick Phil this time, though. I think at this point in his career, he's playing as good as he has in his life. He's just a little bit older, and I think he's gonna prevail on this one. But I wouldn't be surprised if Tiger won either.
I was gonna, Hanson, who's your pick?
Oh gosh, that's tough.
I got Tiger.
I'll take Tiger. I mean, he seems to be rounding into form, although it's hard to tell. I mean, that's months away. You know, so much can change in a month, let alone a week or a day.
Oh my God! Yeah.
But you know, Ken, you mentioned their short games, and not only are they two of the best champions of all time, they are widely considered to be the two best short game players of this modern era. So it's going to be great to see who's hot with the short game. Those guys are going to be putting on a show.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yes, that will definitely be a fun match. And, you know, Phil's been overlooked for many years, in my opinion. I mean, he's won 40-some-odd tournaments, and it doesn't get talked about a lot. He's won six majors, I think, in all those tournaments. So he's been a great player for a long time and continues to be at his age of, I think he's 46, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he still hits it a long way and can get around with these young guys.
You know what's funny is you think about 1986 and Jack Nicklaus winning the Masters at 46 and how old he seemed at that point. And maybe it's because I was like six at that point. But, or no, I was older than that. I was like 12, 13. I'm 44 years old. 46 doesn't seem as old as 46 used to be.
It's not. There's one thing that Tiger did for golf. He brought physical fitness into golf. And everybody's followed him to be able to stay in. Any of these guys that are at the top of the game now, they're all working out. They have personal trainers. They have psychiatrists. They have a lot of people around them that's helping them win. He's brought that physical fitness, and he's brought a lot of money to golf.
Well, and touching back on what you were just saying about the amateurs and the impact that the amount of play and practice that is required to be a high-level amateur and be successful, you look at what the guys who are pros have and the access to the resources that they have, it's difficult to crack into it without access to all that.
It sure is. And it's great that they can do it, but it is. You have to dedicate a lot of time to practicing. I don't know if you've heard of Josh Chamberlain. He was runner-up in the stadium quite a few years ago at Kachiko, and he was a member at Crotchet Mountain when I was the pro there. In the couple years that he played great, he was practicing every single day, hitting 4 or 5 buckets of balls and playing 18 holes. Now, this is 10 years later. He has 4 kids, oldest 6 years old. He plays like 3 times a year, and he plays in events, and he does all right, but he can't crack that top. He's not as good as he used to be when he was playing all the time, and that's what it takes. It takes that practice.
I will tell you this before we let you go. I used to play a lot more golf before we had kids.
You know, I think that's everybody.
I know. It's just a fact of the matter. Well, Ken, we appreciate the time and look forward to catching up with you out on the course sometime soon.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
All right, great. Thanks. Take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
That was Ken Hamill, the head pro at Stonebridge Country Club over in Goffstown, as well as the honorary president of the New Hampshire PGA. And we will take a quick break. Come right back. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, and we're really excited. We have a special guest from all the way from Grand Junction, Colorado, which if you've listened to the show at all, or I guess have seen me walking around town wearing the Grand Junction Rocky shirt, or follow baseball at all in this town, which seems to be everybody, you know that's where Grant Levine's playing. So we have Patty Arnold, who is the baseball beat writer for the Grand Junction Sentinel, and has seen the pride of Bedford firsthand. Patty, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So you've seen Grant, and you describe New Hampshire as not being a baseball hotbed, and I will agree the weather is certainly not conducive to it, but this town we live in of 22,000 is a pretty baseball-crazy place. What were your first thoughts? Of course, they tell you, hey, the first-round pick's coming, and you hear the Rockies drafted a kid from Bedford, New Hampshire, and that he was going to be heading out to Grand Junction to join the team.
Well, we were kind of watching it, and you immediately, when I'm doing the draft story, you immediately start Googling, and you get all his stats. And then later on that night, we talked to the director of scouting, Bill Schmidt, and everything I saw is big, raw, power hitter, left side first baseman. I went, well, this is something that the Rockies need. I mean, that's what they're looking for at first base. And everything I saw is this kid can hit, this kid can play. And then it was like, but he's from New Hampshire. And, no New Hampshire, it's like, so I start Googling, New Hampshire baseball players and things.
Yeah.
It's like, you can play anywhere.
Right.
And granted, he might not have the national resume of a lot of players. You go back, David Dahl, their first round pick in 12, who was the first year here, had the national resume. I mean, he played on Team USA on the junior side and played in all the perfect game, everything. But if you want to play, you can play. And that's what the director of scouting said, I don't care where the kid came from. This kid can play. And in the 35 games he's played here, he's shown nothing to the contrary. This kid can play. So, you know, it's kind of fun. I talked to him about being the, you know, carrying the flag of New Hampshire in baseball. He goes, I like that. I like being the guy from New Hampshire and kind of representing the entire state in baseball. And he's, you know, he wants to be a pro baseball player, and he's got a great future ahead.
You know, it's funny because his dad, Kevin, coached the 2012 team that Grant was on that won the state championship, Little League team, and the 2015 team that did the same with his younger brother, Kyle, who's going into his sophomore year in high school. And so I have a daughter who's 12 now. Before she was playing Little League or T-ball, I had always wanted to umpire. I'd never done it. I had done just about everything else related to baseball. That was one thing I'd never done. So I started umpiring some of these games. So I got to meet Kevin at that point back when. And you look, and all these kids are showing up to the field wearing the league-issued pants and socks. And then you have Grant. And I remember seeing him at 10 and saying, who is that kid? That kid's, you know, he's wearing pants that are down to the ankles, like everybody wears now. But you look at him and you say, all right, this kid is something else. And even at 10 years old, he had a reasonable facsimile of what his swing looks like now. And it's weird to, I have vivid memories of seeing it then. And I said it to Kevin a few weeks ago, but it's weird how to look back and go, that was 2010. Now we're 2018. And I can't believe this stuff happened in the intervening 8 years. It's bizarre.
Yeah, he's got a really good swing. For an 18-year-old kid, he uses the whole field. He's not a pull hitter. He's using the whole left side of the field. He hits up the middle. He's got opposite field power, which plays into the field that they play on here because it's a short porch and left. It's only 302 down the line.
Okay.
But it's a double wall. They've extended the wall to make it, you know, where the 110-pound shortstops can't hit home runs like they used to.
Yep.
It's 410 to the alleys. It's 400 to dead center. And he uses the whole field. So it's really nice to see an 18-year-old kid who understands, and he can make adjustments at the plate. And it's an impressive thing for a young kid out of high school who can do that. And, you know, the managers, he said, you know, he's done nothing but play really good baseball ever since the first day we put him in the lineup. So he's got a very good future ahead of him.
It struck me when you first described, when you first heard about him and there were words used like big and raw, and normally you do think about a prospect who's big physically, and you think about raw power, and maybe he's not that refined yet, but he is a very refined hitter with his batting eye and the fact that he can use the whole field. And then what was it like early on in the season? I mean, how long did it take for you to realize how special he was as a hitter? About a week? Because he got off to such a hot start.
A day? I'm looking at his splits. His splits are insane. I mean, 18-year-old kids don't have splits like this kid. It's just looking at his presence at the plate and the swing. I mean, it's a good swing. Like I said, he'll take the ball the other way. He doesn't try to do too much. That's the thing that impressed me is I think his first game at home got a pitch and had a runner on base, and he probably could have, you know, tried to take it out of the park, and he didn't. He just went with the pitch, hit it kind of, I want to say it was a little base hit, not really up the middle, to the third base side, up the middle, and got the run home. I mean, it's just, a lot of kids there, okay, I've got somebody on, I've got to pull this. And he's playing on a little bit of adrenaline for the first home game, and you're a first round comp pick and all that pressure, it doesn't bother him. I mean, he got a pitch, he knew he couldn't pull, he just went with the pitch and got a base hit, and just, he's done that every single night. Yeah, he's going to have nights that, you know, he's had a couple of check swings lately that, you know, third strike check swing, not really sure, kind of maybe got fooled a little bit, which is normal. But more times than not, he's going to get the bat on the ball and do something with it. You know, the power hasn't really, since his first couple of weeks, he hasn't been hitting for a lot of power, but he's second in the league in hitting. So the power will come. You know, he's like nobody else his age, maybe since Dahl. This kid is a student of hitting. It's just he studies everybody. Having Matt Holliday here last week was great for him. They're standing behind the cage. And I was upstairs watching on Wednesday before the game. Holiday's getting ready to play in his first game since last season. He and Grant and a couple other players are back behind the cage, and I could tell they're hitting. They're talking hitting, and Holiday's kind of showing them, hey, you don't want to lunge at that pitch. This is how – and he's got five kids around him just soaking in everything. So – He's a sponge right now, trying to learn everything he can about hitting, and it's working out for him.
It's a lot of fun to hear that, and of course we heard that Matt Holliday was on the club as well, and knew that the two of them were interacting with each other, and just that the opportunity to be that close to somebody who has hit 314 homers in the major leagues and has been there and done that. It can only really help a player grow. Now, just to reacquaint our listeners, we're with Patty Arnold, who's the beat writer for the Grand Junction Sentinel. So she has seen Bedford's own Grant Levine play firsthand, which is why we have her on the air. But for you guys, this is year eight for the Rockies and Grand Junction. It looks like they've made some really nice improvements to Splizio Field. But what are some of your favorite moments during that time?
You know, it's always kind of fun to watch the kids come through and see them grow. You know, Raimel Tapia came in here and we're like, you know, May is a long, skinny kid. And he can really run. And just to kind of see him blossom into the player he was, it's like, wow, this kid's got, you know, I mean, this kid was rail thin when he got here, and he's still not a huge kid. Great arm, great instincts. You know, watching David Dahl play the outfield, he was miles ahead of his age group, just in the way he read the ball off the bat, things like that. I mean, there's kids you can tell right away that this is going to transfer to the higher level. And then you get kids that, like, who was that kid? And, you know, a kid like Forrest Wall, you know, that aren't really high prospects but make the most of their chances, that's kind of fun. I mean, obviously, having a Todd Helton come in and do a rehab stint is fun. You know, and he really treated the kids well. He bought dinner for him, I think, every night.
Yeah, no, that's like the standard rehab staple.
Yeah, that's
the time
do.
Everybody gets to eat. Yeah, including the front office. I remember walking down into the clubhouse and picking up whatever Outback Steakhouse I could find because it's better than eating a hot dog after the game.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I remember guys saying, he bought a steak.
Uh-huh.
You know,
oh, my God,
you know, it's like, this is awesome, you know. Yeah, you know, just to kind of see that interaction and see how the kids, and I was talking to a couple of them, and, you know, Nico Decolati is is an all-star outfielder with the club, and asked him, you know, what are you soaking up? Because you're an outfielder playing outfield really for the first time, because he came in as an infielder. He said, well, yeah, I'm trying to kind of give him his space, because they understand he's here to do a job. So for the first couple of days, they kind of backed off, and, you know, he's like, guys, you know, he'd go out and start talking to him. So it was, you know, anything they want to know, the major league players are so willing to help the young kids, because they realize somebody did it for them.
Yep.
It's like Holiday said, 20 years ago, somebody did that for him. So, you know, it's kind of their way to give back. And, you know, it was kind of fun to watch. Holiday's two oldest sons were in the dugout, and they've got the Grand Junction caps on and the Rocky shirts, and, you know, having a great time shagging balls and just kind of fit in.
See, now so you're just making me miss minor league baseball, really. That's it.
Yeah. Well, the funny story came out was the locker that Holiday was assigned was right next to Grant's.
Yep.
And the manager said, you know, Holiday's laughing. He said, yeah, my kid was on varsity this year, and so was my locker mate. You know.
So love it.
He could relate. I mean, granted, you know, his kid was only 14 and made varsity. I mean, this Matt Holiday's son, I think, is going to be a special player. But, you know, just to kind of relate, Holiday's at the end of his career.
Right.
Grant's at the beginning, and he's relating to this kid, and it's kind of that's to me the fun part, is to kind of see how these kids soak up anything that they can learn. And Grant talking about the All-Star game, what are you looking forward to? So I'm looking forward to talking to the other players about their approach to hitting, what they go through, you know, and the Northwest League kids, because they've been in usually a year or two longer than the Pioneer League kids. So just that tells you what his process is. He's trying to learn from anybody he can. So it's he's got the right mindset.
And it's important, too, when you go from playing high school ball and you sign the contract, now all of a sudden you realize this is a job and I'm committed to this 100%. Same way as if you were a stockbroker, an accountant, whatever, you have to talk to other people that are succeeding doing what you're doing and try to learn as much as you can, as fast as you can. But not all of us figure that out when we're 18 years old.
Right. And, yeah, the top two draft picks, obviously, they signed for pretty good money. I mean, Grant got a really nice signing bonus, you know, his slot. Ryan Rollison the same way, but you'd never know it. You know, it's just, hey, yeah, there's no jealousy on this club. We're all here, you know, to do the same thing. We're trying to get to the next level. But it's all about development in rookie ball. You know, the outcome of the games, yes, they matter. This team, every one of them, we want to win the second half. We want to get in the playoffs, and they're playing like it. So you can see from the first half, they went through a really bad spell where they just weren't very good. Now this is a pretty good baseball team. Not only are there good players on the team, they play really well together. And they're having fun, you can tell. I mean, they're, you know, it's like a college team. That camaraderie that comes with being in college baseball is on this club. And talking to a couple of grounds crew guys who watch the games every night and have been here from the start, this is the best team Grand Junction has had since that first year in 2012 that made the playoffs.
Wow.
So it's not the big name David Dahl, because everybody knew who David Dahl was coming in. you know, Ryan Rollison, everybody knew Ole Miss's best pitcher. People hadn't heard of Grant Levine, but they figured out who this kid is. They don't have that superstar guy like they had in some of John Gray's not on this team. You know, people, we had David Dahl, we had John Gray, we had Eddie Butler, Scott Oberg, you know, players who are now playing for big league clubs. A couple of these guys have outstanding chances to be. I mean, Grant Levine right now, I think you can tag him first baseman of the future. I mean, I think he will move up on the prospect list by the end of the season. I think in the instructional league, I'm sure he'll go to instructional league in the fall, and that's when they're really going to work on how to refine his swing. They're not going to break down that swing. They'll refine it, and they'll also work even more on his footwork at first base. He'll work with, you know, the infield instructors, and the former hitting coach here was a very good major league first baseman. So I'm guessing he will be working with Lee Stevens quite a bit and refine his tools around first base. He's already solid. He's only made 3 errors in over 300 chances. He's a really good first baseman. He'll become an outstanding first baseman. I think his future's great.
That title, first baseman of the future, is a pretty nice title to have when
that's
you're still
heady.
When you're still 18 years old.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, they just traded the first baseman who was here last year. Him 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, they traded a couple of them from Asheville.
Yeah, you know, they're looking for first baseman, so you know, I think he's definitely in their plans to, you know, become a guy who can eventually. Now, it's not going to be next year. You know, we have such an, I call it an Instapot society now.
Yep.
They want it now. He's not going to be in Coors Field next year. You know, next year will be Asheville. You know, it's going to take 3 or 4 years for him to move through the chain and keep refining. But, you know, I think this kid has every chance to play at Coors Field.
It's a lot of fun to hear that. We're with Patty Arnold, who's the beat writer for the Grand Junction Sentinel, which is where Grant Levine is playing. He's playing in Grand Junction, Colorado. It's funny, there are a couple nuggets that came out of those last statements. I think the first and foremost was we had Chris Carpenter, the former Cy Young Award winner, Matt Holliday's teammate, on the show a few weeks back. He lives in our town as well. And asked him who his most difficult to face in the major leagues was. Lee Stevens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, wait a second, Lee Stevens, the former California Angel? Yep, sure enough. So,
let's go way back. I covered Lee Stevens in Legion Ball in Lawrence, Kansas.
Seriously. Okay. Everything ties back to Kansas.
Everything circles around Lawrence, Kansas. yeah. And I told him that. He's like, wow. And I said, yeah, Lee, I'm old. He said, no. I said, no. You were in high school. You know, I was in college and stayed in Lawrence and was working for the Journal World part time. And I was mainly, you know, a desk person or whatever. But part of my summer job was covering the Legion Hawks. And I kept seeing the city. It's like, I covered Lee Stevens.
God, that's funny.
That's so weird. So, yeah.
It's really funny.
Lee will help him tremendously in instructional league, I'm sure.
It blows my mind because I hadn't thought about Lee Stevens in 20 years at least. And now he comes up twice in interviews in like 3 or 4 weeks. Bizarre.
Yeah.
And he's from Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah, Lee's a good guy.
And I haven't thought of the Lawrence Journal World in a while, but I've read that paper a lot because I grew up going to visit my grandparents in Lawrence, and we'd go to a couple Royals games every summer. George Brett was my guy. And so that brings back fond memories.
Yeah. No, I had a good time working at the Journal World. I learned a lot, that's for sure.
So before we let you go, because I've been to Colorado a number of times, but never as far southwest as Grand Junction. What makes somebody who is from the greater Kansas City area decide, hey, I'm going to pack up and go here and stay?
I got a job offer. I met the former sports editor at a conference in Champaign, Illinois, and we got fogged in at the airport as we were leaving. So we were having lunch, having a couple beers, just kind of, you know, chit-chatting. And he said, hey, you know, if I ever have an opening, I'll give you a call. And I said, okay. And about, I don't know, 6 months later, he called me. And he said, hey, I got a guy leaving, and would you be interested? And I'd been in Olathe for about 5 years. Kind of looking for something different. I said, sure. So I flew out to Grand Junction and got the job and packed up a U-Haul, and a friend and I drove the U-Haul all night because we left it. It was so hot in, you know, August across Kansas, and my little Toyota did not have air conditioning. So we left at like 3 a.m. and drove across, you know, Kansas and Colorado, and hoped that my little Toyota would make it up Vail Pass.
Yep.
And basically, I was more concerned about getting to Eisenhower Tunnel because it was hard on that little car. Made it, and I felt at home here. I looked, you know, went through the whole homesickness. My whole family's still in Kansas City. Looked to get back, you know, after about a year, but nothing really panned out. And, you know, actually grew to love this area. There's a lot of things to do here, and it became home.
It's amazing how that happens. I've been up here as a Southern California native for the better part of 10 years now, and sometimes a place just grows on you.
I don't miss humidity.
We have a ton of humidity this summer, and I'm really not down with that.
Yeah, it's been, you know, hot. I mean, it's a very dry heat. We're in a desert area. We're at 4,500 feet altitude, so we're not super high. We don't get a lot of snow, and we really wish we could get a lot more rain than we've gotten because we're in a drought.
Yeah.
Right now. It's a pretty nice climate, and, you know, you wear a winter coat a couple times a week or a couple times a year, a couple weeks.
Yep.
It'll be cold. You don't have to shovel a lot of snow, and you got to water your lawn. But other than that, it's a nice area to live, and you know, we've got a lot of things going on, so it just kind of stuck.
I was it seems like a good spot. I was chuckling to hear you say Olathe. I was listening to a Dodgers Rockies game years ago, and Vin Scully references Kit Pello and drops it in as the great Vin Scully, Olathe. What?
Olathe.
Olathe. Yeah. I mean, but anybody who's lived there, you hear the Olathe Ford commercials, you know it's Olathe. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's an Olathe, Colorado just south of here.
Oh, there you go. Who knew?
It's actually named after Olathe, Kansas.
Huh.
The guy who founded Olathe, Colorado, was from Olathe, Kansas.
That's really funny.
great sweet corn out of Olathe, Colorado.
It's funny because I saw something about that on the Sentinel website.
Olathe sweet, uh-huh. And the corn festival's coming up. I think it might be this weekend.
It's awesome.
Yeah, best sweet corn it's awesome.
All right.
I had some for dinner last night.
I was going to say, I hope to get out and check it out firsthand. Well, Patty, we appreciate the time. What's that?
No problem.
What did you just say?
That and our Palisade peaches.
Really? All right.
Oh,
you may have sold me on
this.
Georgia
peaches.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate the time. Great to hear Grant perspective on Grant from somebody else, and also walk down memory lane a little bit. So enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy the time off and enjoy the All-Star game.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. That was Patty Arnold, who is the beat writer for the Grand Junction Sentinel in Grand Junction, Colorado. We'll take a quick break. Come right back. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. That was a really fun interview.
Yeah,
by the way. Patty Arnold from the Grand Junction Sentinel talking baseball, talking about Grant. It's really cool to hear her perspective. And she's not somebody that has, there's always some kind of confirmation bias when it's somebody that you see and you say, oh, he can do this, he can do that. But it's interesting when you talk to somebody who is watching him as a completely blank slate, and what she has seen validates what we have seen. And what she heard from the front office validates some of the rumblings that we heard. So that's pretty cool. And it's always fun to hear about somewhere that you've never been to. I could spend the rest of my life wandering, I guess. So speaking of that, basketball nomads, the basketball tournament, $2 million prize. I noticed that we did not enter our team Putney's Ballers in that, even though we won the Bedford Men's Basketball League Championship.
Yeah, we might have had a shot.
That lame. We should have entered him in.
With the team chemistry.
Yeah, bad.
Jimmer
Fredette
is back.
Yes.
He's back on American soil, making threes, stirring up discussions everywhere about whether he'll get another shot in the NBA and when. The guy's a flat-out scorer. He was averaging 33 a game in this tournament heading into the semifinals last night. And he led a furious comeback. He ended up scoring 22 last night, including 11 in the fourth. His team fell up short by 4 points, so they get nothing for getting to the semis and losing. But just fun to see him out there doing his thing again. Looks like he's in good shape, and he's still got that magic. Sweet shot. I think he will get another shot. I think he deserves another shot. If you look at his stats over in China where he's been playing, he's been averaging 37 a game.
You've probably been streaming the games from China.
I might have to next year. But, I mean, if you look at his stats, he's shooting 40% from three, well over 90% at the line. The last 2 years, I think he's been 93 and 95. So he's almost a 50-40-90 guy 2 years in a row, 37 a game, like I said. Yeah, he needs to pick it up on defense, but shooting's at a premium in the NBA, and I just think that some team can figure it out, get him out there, take advantage of his offensive skills, and he showed a little bit more versatility in this TBT, getting to the lane, floaters, all that. So made for a little fun summer basketball to see that last night.
It's been enjoyable to watch this. The other thing that I like is how the game reaches its terminus, where they take the leading team score, add 7 points to it, and then it's first one to it wins.
Right.
I love that.
First dead ball.
I don't know why.
Less than 4 minutes in the fourth quarter, you stop it, and then you add the 7 points, and you say, first team to get to that number. So if it was like 73 to 70, first team to get to 80 wins.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a cool element. I wish I had thought of it.
And like they said on the broadcast, the game always ends with a made basket.
Yeah.
So it's always like sort of a walk-off buzzer beater.
It's so fan-friendly. It's
whether
just
it's
cool.
A three, a layup, a free throw.
Yeah.
Lots of strategy comes into play.
Yeah, so that has been enjoyable to catch on the highlights. And also kind of fun to see that these former NBA players are putting together almost super teams where Greg Oden and Jared Sullinger get
the Ohio
two of
State
them
team
back together. Like, it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be fun.
A lot of fun.
So make it fun.
Next week's going to be fun, too.
Yeah. We got to run this by the big guy down the hall.
I think he'll be up for it.
We'll see. But what we are going to try to do is
take the show on the road.
Take the show on the road. I think what we may have to do is record a bunch of it here earlier in the week and then record a segment and say just chuck this segment in the back end of it. But Hanson and I, a week from now, will be at Belle Reve Golf Club in St. Louis, Missouri. I was not anticipating that I was actually going to the PGA Championship. It just worked out that way.
The 100th PGA.
Really?
Yep.
Fascinating.
Big event.
Math.
Tiger and Phil are going to be out there. We talked about their one-on-one match coming up in Thanksgiving, but they still have an opportunity to win a major.
Yep.
Last major of the year could be Tiger's 15th.
I cannot forget to do my major pool.
Yep. Yeah, Little League's over, so
that
no
I already
excuses.
Paid for. Yeah, I really have no excuse. There's never any excuse for me.
But we're going to be out there, so we need to record a segment out there and
yeah, we do
take the show on the road.
Yeah, we do. I wonder who we could line up as a guest. What random person could we get?
Well, I went to a couple of the PGA tournaments in Boston over the years, and after one of the rounds, we got a huge kick out of Henrik Stenson. He comes off the course, after probably shooting 3 under, and there's this little mini golf course as part of the area where you've got all the vendors, you know, showing new products. So there's this mini golf course, and he goes out there with his son, and he's walking around, you know, like putt through the lighthouse, and he's got his actual putter that he just used in the PGA Tour, and now he's just playing mini golf amongst all the fans. So maybe we'll just catch somebody coming off the course, you know, on the way to the parking lot.
It's funny. I golfed for the first time in years, played a round of golf by myself last week, got to the course, and it wasn't by myself. I was playing with other people, but got to the course, opened up my golf bag and realized I had no golf shoes. And so I played in flip-flops and shot. The other thing nobody told me, Deerfield Country Club doesn't have a driving range. Oops. So Maggie and I get out there and I'm like, hey, let's hit some balls. And there's no driving range. Uh-oh.
Got to work it out on the course.
There's nothing to work out. So anyway, shot a 47 in flip-flops. But you get that kind of, all right, I'm back and I really sort of want to play a little bit more. Not to mention, I got some really nice clubs on eBay for $35.
Yeah,
which I've told everybody now, literally everybody.
that'll whet the appetite.
Oh, dude, yes. So, yeah, a little bit of golf, which will be fun. And, might need to watch Tin Cup in preparation. What are the three things that David Sims hates?
What are they?
Do you remember the quote?
No.
When Tin Cup says, whatever you think of me, you should know that David Sims hates old people, children, and dogs. It's a good movie reference. I really do need to watch that. So, all right, on that note, I think we're out of time. So we're going to do some kind of segment from the PGA next week. We'll see how that goes. I do have a splitter, so we would figure out how we can I have no idea how we'd record it. So anyway, just wanted to quickly thank our guest, Ken Hamill, the head pro at Stonebridge and also the honorary president of the New Hampshire PGA. Patty Arnold, who is the beat writer for the Grand Junction Sentinel following the Grand Junction Rockies, where Bedford's own Grant Levine has been plying his trade for the last couple months. And Andrew Hansen, as always, thanks for your great work and preparation for the show. And thanks to everybody here at Bedford 105.1, Harry, Bill, Colleen, and Chris. I haven't seen Bill and Colleen in a while. Harry and Chris occasionally will migrate into here. So,
the radio side,
yeah,
I think.
Onto the radio side from the TV side. So thank you to everybody here. Thank you to you for listening to the show. We will catch you next week. From somewhere, you've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.